Today is Thursday, April 12th, 2018. It is 4:30, and this is panel 4201, titled Resonance Borealis. I will do a brief introduction before you fly through space here. Just like on flying on anything, you have to be given a safety lecture. So this is, as I said, the Resonance Borealis performance. But before we start with the performance, we thought you might want to have what might be called an Aurora 101, an introduction to what the beautiful sights are in the sky that you'll be hearing along with the beautiful music. We have as a guest speaker here, Dr. Robert Ergen from the Astrophysical and Planetary Sciences Department.
Hello, Robert.
He worked on Aurora 20-ish years ago, but has worked studying astrophysical plasmas throughout the time and has been on missions such as MAVEN that went to Mars, missions to Jupiter, and missions even as far as Earth. And he will talk to you a little bit about what are auroras. So thank you, Robert.
Well, thank you all. So this show is really a mixture of science and art. It really is a blend in a lot of ways. And I don't really see much of a distinction in some cases, particularly in the aurora. Now, I gotta fully admit that I haven't studied the aurora directly for almost a decade now, but I did a lot of work when I was young on the aurora, and I can tell you something about it. I can tell you that it's been around since prior to mankind. It's been around for maybe, when the dinosaurs were walking the earth, there were probably aurora. So you can imagine the ancients, thousands of years ago, when they looked up into the sky and saw these dancing, beautiful green and red lights moving around, that they looked up with a lot of wonder. So how many of you have actually seen aurora? Well, that's a lot. Yeah, I keep thinking we must have a lot of Minnesotans or Canadians around here.
Wisconsin,
there you go, there you go. They're basically, for those of you who haven't seen them, enjoy the pictures. And they're basically a light show that happens almost on a daily basis in the north and in the south, near the poles of the planets. Now, we really didn't understand them, and the science behind auroras is pretty phenomenal. It is quite complicated. So whatever you've read on the web about the cause of aurora, particularly if you read Wikipedia or something like that, they're wrong. It's just that complicated that people give, not in the sense that they're trying to be wrong, it's just that simple explanations aren't there. And that's why it's been such fascinating science. So let's fast forward from the ancients to about 100, maybe 120 years ago, the turn of the century, when we were just starting to understand things like electricity and magnetism. This is bringing modern science into trying to explain the aurora. And if you look carefully at these streaks in the aurora, These streaking lines, those aren't from the pictures, those are real. You'll see those, you'll see these vertical lines there. They turn out to be the Earth's magnetic field. You're actually now starting to see what the Earth's magnetic field looks like in the north and the south. So it became pretty clear that we need to understand electricity and magnetism. And in fact, research on the aurora sparked research in many, many other areas of physics. Not only electricity and magnetism, but if we leap forward another 20 years, it turns out that the aurora on Earth is visible. You can see it with your own eyes. And that we needed quantum mechanics to understand how we can get this. If you put this light in a spectrum, a screen light, and the red light that you see, you will see just one single frequency of green and one or two single frequencies of red. They're very, very fine. And they could only be produced, this visible part, by oxygen. So quantum mechanics now tells us that we have something controlled by our magnetic field and something that needs oxygen to be visible. It doesn't need oxygen to have, for example, emissions in the ultraviolet or infrared. Okay, so let's fast forward again to around 1950s when the discovery of the solar wind occurred. People now understood that stars, not just our sun, but almost all stars, blow off this wind of plasma. Plasma is a state of matter in which the electrons are stripped from the atoms, and they're ionized, they're charged. So they follow and obey, or they are much more obedient to electric fields and magnetic fields than regular matter would be, because they are in this charged state. It is, in fact, this interaction of the solar wind that's coming from our sun with the Earth's magnetic field, which is shielding us, in a way, from the solar wind, that is energizing and giving the, ultimately causing this beautiful display. So the story is rather complex after that. In the early 60s, people put up rockets and balloons to try to get measurements into these altitudes, but they defy balloons. They're much higher than any balloon flight can go. They're about 100 miles above the Earth's surface. And so it wasn't until we got rockets in there we got the first of the measurements. And finally, the space age hit. And with the space age, we were able to put up satellites. And the satellites clearly measured electrons accelerated and streaming towards the Earth. These electrons were accelerated actually close to Earth, but the energy of that acceleration comes far from the tail of our magnetosphere, anti-sunward. So you can see it's a circuitous trip the electrons have to make from the sun into our magnetosphere, all the way back to the tail, and then back forward towards the Earth, all focused into the north and the south end of the Earth. So this electron acceleration eventually causes these electrons to strike the oxygen in our upper atmosphere and emit this beautiful green and red light. Now I like to, I will say that this isn't just unique to the Earth. Every magnetized planet in our solar system has aurora. Jupiter, for example, if we have Jupiter. It has an aurora. This is looking down at Jupiter's north pole. It has aurora just like the Earth does. These aurora are not visible. They're in the ultraviolet because Jupiter doesn't have any oxygen. It's hydrogen, in this case, and helium that are lighting up, primarily hydrogen. All right, I'm not going to bore you with any more of the aurora one-on-one because I know you're here for music. I just want to say that just think of the science as you're listening to the music, because I think that science is often misunderstood. When you think of the smallest things, when we go down to the size of the atom, and then you think of the things that come out of life, for example, like microbes and small elements of life, and the beautiful flower that life produces, and the aurora that, the beautiful sights, the aurora of the stars, all the way up to these gigundo, supermassive black holes that the universe gives us, you realize that science and nature are really wonderful, and they are an art in itself. So I think this is the perfect blend of science and art, and I shall now let you hear the piano music. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Robert. I realized I didn't introduce myself. I'm your moderator, Joel Parker. I'm an astronomer at Southwest Research Institute, and I study massive stars and have been on missions that have flown by Pluto and landed on a comet, but I've never seen the aurora. So this is a particularly special show for me to see. I just wanted to reiterate from my experience as an astronomer the importance of keeping your cell phone off, not even to text something like, "This is so cool." We're getting dark adapted. At least you are. I'm not, because I have these lights in my eyes. But the getting dark adapted allows you to see really faint colors. And you're going to want that, and your neighbors are going to want it. So please make sure your cell phones are off. Now I'd like to introduce our performer, Roman Zaveda. He has a bio in the Conference of World Affairs pamphlet, which I really encourage reading. It's really phenomenal. He started playing piano when he was 4 years old. It seems like he hasn't stopped since. And this is a very special performance that he has developed that he will tell you about. So, with no more ado, Roman Zaveda.
Hello, hello. Coming on stage. My place. Well, welcome. Welcome in my, I guess, my universe. It's a very, I'm not a pianist like the others for some reason. Composition and piano together, for me, goes really together. So I started at four, but I started to compose also at four. And had trouble at school because they didn't want me to compose, so I did everything to fail the conservatory at 12 to continue more as a self-taught. So basically, and I did a lot of a tour of silent movies because in another musician's life, I do also piano accompaniment on silent movies. And that's a bit where this project started from. I was touring, I brought my family with me. My mother was there, my girlfriend, my little baby at the time. And I was like, hey, I have an idea. I'll go up north and improvise and compose under the northern lights. The reaction in the car was, you're a very good public. There were no reaction at all. So I just said nothing. That was in 12 and 2, sorry, my French accent, Terry. And 2011. So it's a while ago I have this in my head. And in 2013, well, there's kind of a cycle of Northern Lights that comes back every more or less 11 years, and 2013 was the year of the peak. So I did some researches, and I was like, huh, it looks interesting. And I've never seen them before also. So I took a risk. 1 month later, I was up north with a tent and an upright piano in the middle of the boreal forest, in the middle of nowhere. So that's how the project started. I called a piano tuner in Yellowknife. You probably know where to find a piano, but he didn't. Yellowknife is fairly small. But so I was like, oh well, the project won't work. But eventually he phoned me back and he found a piano, an old piano, a terrible piano. But it was better than nothing. So he found this piano in a warehouse and we brought this piano. We were six people pushing the piano over the Canadian Shield. Yes, the Yellowknife people also laughed. No, it was very quite an intriguing situation for the Yellowknifers, I guess. I mean, there were people, I was almost by myself. There were like people in the bush hearing what's happening. There's a musician in the forest, in the boreal forest. He's playing piano under the northern lights. But it worked. And so we went back. I did this album that was released in 2016, so 2 years ago. But at the same time, we went back with a film crew to film the Northern Lights in 360 degrees. So we had five cameras everywhere, and we filmed it in 30 images per second, which is, we're pretty much the first ones actually in the world to have been able to film them. We did a lot of time lapses before, and some new cameras came out, and at the really perfect moment. So we explored that and it worked pretty well. And so we did this kind of show, immersive show. Obviously I see it as a show because I'm performing, but it's also at the same time a film. So it's a 42 minute film, more or less. But keep in mind, before it became an immersive experience, it's a musical experience. So you will hear the pieces of the album that is available at the end. I'll talk to you about that. There's only 18 left. Well, we'll manage something. It do not exist, right? So yes, that's basically it. So welcome, I guess, in my universe, welcome in my résonance boréale. I guess that could be translated with northern vibes. These vibes that can't really be described in words in my case, so it's in music that I describe the power of the North. Thank you.
September 2011. I go on tour. On stage, I improvise on the piano under the lights of silent films. I am in dialogue with the moving black and white images. Between each performance, the road fascinates me. The time, the space, the remoteness. The sun breaks through the clouds on the horizon. An idea comes to my mind. This intuition beckons me on a new musical journey. The Great North awaits. September 2013. On the banks of Prelude Lake, I anchor an old upright piano into the Northwest Territories. Between the skinny pines, I am tiny and alone in the middle of the taiga. At dusk, I settle behind my instrument. My fingers warm up to the keyboard. Suddenly, the night breaks into color. The northern lights dance for me in the darkness. I improvise under the stars. September 2015. 2 years later, I walk on the same bed of lichen with Bruno and Dominic. We plant our tripod into the rocky crest of the Canadian Shield. We point our cameras to the infinite heavens. We wait for them. Under the glowing moon, the lights drift and reveal. We film their beauty in real time, 30 frames per second. We capture 360 degrees of their splendor in high resolution. Today, if I was a writer, I would describe the northern lights with my words. If I was a painter, I would reveal their colors with my brushstrokes. My name is Roman Zavada, and I am a pianist. I write with my instrument,
and I paint with my notes. Welcome to my world. Welcome to my résonance boréale.
Thank you.
always hard to talk between these pieces. But yeah, for the last piece, the next song is going to be the last one. It's called Raisonnements Boréales, the title of the album, of the project. Just want to thank CWA for the invitation and the Fisk Planetarium for, well, letting me. It's my fourth time here, by the way. So it's kind of a tradition now, so thank you so much for your public to come and have a sold-out planetarium. It's good. So we'll leave each other with Raisonnements Boréales. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stuart, thank you so much. Yes, I hope you enjoyed. I hope you still, I don't know, I'm not there, sorry. After each show, I don't know, I'm like always mixed up when I talk, especially in English. But yes, I think we can have a few questions.
We can.
And at the end, I think there's already someone at the door. There's a few CDs available. This morning, it sold pretty well. So there's a few there left, so first come, and or else I could take your address and send you this by mail or something. We'll manage, we'll find a solution, no worries. So thank you for coming. Take care.
So after watching that, I just can't bear to look down at a phone and an app to take questions. So I'm going to do this old school and just, if you have a question, raise your hand. I'll repeat it to make sure everyone can hear it. We'll start with you. So how much is real time of the imagery?
Well, the two first pieces, obviously, it was computer generated. Had a few pictures, but after that, once the auroras were there, it's mainly all of them except one piece, where you kind of probably, it was very fast. So that was time lapses. So we had extra cameras that we placed on rigs, under trees, under pretty much anywhere we could place the rig. And so we did time lapses pretty much every night. So we kind of sued these time lapses. But all the rest, especially the two last pieces, it's one of the kind of a climax of Northern Lights in the pacing. So we left the most beautiful for the end. But it's all in real time. But sometimes we have a feeling that the sky is turning or the stars are turning, but the Northern Lights are in real time. It's just that we kind of turn the video in the computer, so it's a circle basically. So we just turn the video, but it's in real time. But so the stars are moving, so that keeps the illusion. Well, yeah. Well, the first trip in 2013, I was there for 2 weeks with the piano. So on 2 weeks, I had, I think, if I remember, 9 nights of Northern Lights. And the second trip, we went maybe 10 days. We had 8 nights. So it's very frequent, especially in fall and in March. Around the equinoxes, their vortexes are more strong. There's more Northern Lights, more chances to see them. So don't go in August or July. There's too many sun, and obviously winter. But I think the best part is in fall, because it's a bit warmer also outdoors. So it's a good part of the year.
What is the next project?
Well, it's a good question. I think the next album will be recorded at home, and composed at home. But no, I have maybe something, maybe recording in different places, like in either ice caves or caves in Austria somewhere. There's kind of an ice cave, and they have already a stage there. So they do concerts, so maybe eventually I'll probably record an album there, just to see the acoustics. But it's hard to beat, actually, definitely the next one will be much simpler. But it's a good trick to get me known, so.
Where is home?
Oh, home is in Montreal. We're waiting for, I'm coming back Saturday, and you know what? 1 foot of snow is supposed to fall, so I'll be shoveling the car at the airport when I come back at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think it's all because of Colorado, by the way, with the currents and everything. Well, obviously the composition was done on the first trip with the piano, but it was pretty much day and night. I think the Northern Lights were there all the time. Obviously, I was trying to just play around them, and it's kind of a dance of color around you, so it's very inspiring. But the adventure towards that, there's a piece called Solitude. There's something very unique up north. If you've been in the northern parts of the world, it's very big. It's very special. There's something that I can't describe. So I go, I'm composed really in a more intuitive way. And because I improvise a lot on silent films and all that, so I really improvise always around a theme. And once I do always the same thing, then that means the composition is done. So that's the start was in 2013, Under the Northern Lights in the North. And after that, I took the recordings, because I recorded everything I did, and I listened everything, and I continued the composition in a way at home on 2 years. It took a while because I had a baby at the time, so I just took my time. Voilà. Both. Well, it's hard to look around, actually. It's still strange to me to be in a dome. It's awkward. In Montreal, we did a dome. There's a big, big dome with no seats, so everybody was sleeping. Well, not sleeping. hope. but we're lying down on beanbags. Well, that was really awkward because, and the people were just at the end. I was like, it's finished. So that's why I kind of present the last piece. Just to kind of guide you a little bit, I forgot the question. Oh yes, no, I close a lot of my eyes, but I'm very focused on what I'm playing because there's a lot of. I have the same show I'm doing on normal venues, so on a normal stage. I have video projection behind, but I have more liberty of interpreting. Here I don't have as much as liberty because I'm still kind of in the timing with the video. I have to kind of finish more or less at the same time. I have a few pieces with a click track to be, especially with the one with the time lapses. I finish really on the last image on the black. That's because I have it. So I'm very focused with all the little in-ear. I have a few cues. So it takes a lot of concentration.
Yeah. See, other questions? Yes, here.
Northwest Territories, and Yukon is just beside.
So, around what
city
are you playing?
Sorry, I didn't catch the last one.
Can you just give us a reference of where Yellow
Knight is? Oh, there it is. Somewhere. Well, it's above, if you know Manitoba, Saskatchewan, the big prairies, it's over the prairies, actually. If you go to the Northwest Territories, it's huge, it's very big. And if you go more north, then you go to the Arctic. So it's really about the 60th parallel. It's pretty far.
Where
is this being filmed? In Yellowknife. Yellowknife, which is the capital of the Northwest Territories in Canada. So it's really in the northern part of Canada.
Is there anybody around?
I missed something. Sorry?
Are there very many people?
Well, Yellowknife is a fairly small community, a small city, but it's still maybe 20,000 people, which is not much. But there's a lot of Indian communities also around Yellowknife. But if you go outside the city, there's basically nothing for miles and miles and miles and miles until the Arctic Ocean. No, I didn't. Well, I'm supposed to, but the thing is, I think in Yellowknife they're a bit used to the Northern Lights. So, like Norway, Finland, Iceland, Yellowknife, it probably worked by curiosity to see what an artist do with inspired by the Northern Lights. But I think more you go south, then it becomes much more exotic. And then that's how the project, because I'm not very known, even in Quebec, my name is well, every year I have more and more things happening, but just the concept behind, with the Northern Lights that most of the people never saw, or maybe saw them from far, but not necessarily underneath, there's not that much, so it becomes really exotic, so they're curious about that, and discover who I am as an artist at the same time. So definitely Yellowknife. Yeah, for some reason they never came back to me. Yeah, they're it's all over there, but they're taking very much a lot of time. Yeah, well, I was camped. We camped the first year. I camped beside the piano, so it was pretty cold at night. But so we had a bit of whiskey in the back too. Yeah. Yeah, well, the project in all, the first year I went 2 weeks, and the second part when we filmed, we went approximately 10 days, and we came back with 400 minutes of raw shooting, and from there on, we took the best parts to assemble for the film.
So, can we ask one more question?
Sorry?
Can we
take this outside? Yes. I'm an artist. One more. Okay.
Is there an availability of DVDs so you can listen to the music and see the
It's a good question. A lot of people think there's video on the CD, but no, there's not. Maybe, I will see, but I think it's not the same to see this on a just small TV. You're missing the kind of the immensity of that, so that's why the dome is really perfect for that. And at the opposite, to do the show without the live performance wouldn't have the same musical experience. So I'd rather leave this for a public presentation. But we're thinking of doing a VR version at least, with the glasses where you kind of look around. But it's not the same as being in a dome. There's still the contact with the public. Instead of being by yourself with these glasses. So I think that's the best solution.
Before you go, I believe we have one announcement from our host
here.
That's what I was going to say.
Thank you.
So, I'm Thor Metzinger, work here at Fisk, and it's my honor to now have seen Resonances Boreal, I think the 8th time. And we still have tickets for tomorrow night, and you need to support the artist and come back and see this film. I've seen it 8 times, and I can tell you, I keep seeing new things, and it still brings tears to my eyes. It's just so elegant, and your music is fantastic. It's just a great experience. So we always love having Roman here at Fisk Planetarium. So thank you. And definitely buy a CD. I have it. It's awesome.